you're a web developer and you are working on the web forms in your current project, you're probably starting to look at ASP.NET Core. It's coming down the road here. And if you're going to be adopting that, you're going to have some questions about the Razor View Engine.
So let's mash on that.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the ASP.NET Monsters. Today, we have a special guest star, Taylor Mullen, who's going to talk to us about Razor.
Sounds fun.
So why don't you start things off by telling us just a little bit about your role with the Razor View Engine, and you work at a place that most people probably recognize the name of.
Yeah, sure. So 4 years ago now, actually just a little over, I just had my anniversary. I joined Microsoft and I worked on the SignalR team. Very cool product. If you're interested, go check it out. But after about a year, I moved over to Razor. And since then, I've been working purely on Razor and just making it what it is today in .NET Core. So it's really fun. It's been a really cool time.
Right on. Okay, so Razor then is the view engine for anybody who's been using MVC. It's been available for some time, but it is the de facto, it is the default, it is the view engine for ASP.NET Core pages or applications.
Yes, for MVC specifically. So like Razor has been used in like a lot of different things. So there's some other third-party frameworks that use variations of Razor, but MVC is pretty cool, and we allow you to just plug away and use all the nice transitions that Razor enables you to do to go from HTML to C# and just have a whole lot of control of that. It's fun.
Awesome. Okay, so let's look at maybe where we're starting from, so what I've pulled up here is just the web forms app created with the default template, and this is kind of the thing that people are familiar with. So there was a master page. We had the ability to, there's these odd looking things that don't quite look like HTML. We've got the bumblebee syntax that wrap our any of our code blocks that we need to do. What were some of the motivators to move away from these things, moving from the typical ASPX page to a Razor page?
So one thing that was really nice about ASPX is that with the bumblebee syntax, you knew where things started and where they ended. Of course, dictated by the C# coloring, of course, just the syntax itself is pretty apparent, right? So it's easy to see. It's easy to know
when you're in code, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now with Razor, we still maintain that. So we have like at curly brace, but we thought that we could do it better. We can make this a little more natural. And so we do a whole bunch of really kind of complex logic to determine when you want to swap into HTML. So actually right here, that this page that you're showing is a prime example of this. So when you do view data title, do you see that period at the end? That period, well, if you're in C#, technically that should be like a continuation. It's like you want to invoke something.
Right, or access a property or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. But we're smart enough to say, okay, well, this might be C#, but this is very possibly not. This could just be a period at the end of an HTML sentence. So we tried to enable the syntax that made it so you did not have to say when something ended and when something stopped. It was more dictated by you have a single C# expression that you want to render to the page, in this case, view data title.
Okay, so and then in this case versus message, which ends up having the closing tag for the H3, there's some intelligence, there's some smarts that go on that's implemented so that it can tell the difference between that, because there's no after that continuation character, there's no more valid C# code at that point. Then is that that's the distinction?
Yeah, that's correct. So like, if like, I think the best way I like to kind of show this is you have your cursor after that period, hit Control Space to invoke IntelliSense.
Right.
So you can tell this is in HTML. Now go ahead and delete the period and retype it. You're now in C#.
Right.
So now go ahead and hit Escape. Now invoke IntelliSense again. Oh,
pulls it back up.
So actually, if you were to retype any more HTML after this,
yeah,
and then go back to that period, you would then end up seeing that that was HTML again.
Right. Interesting. Gotcha.
So the idea is that we try and find out when something is a singular C# expression, and we have a little bit of leeway there. So when we see that period, we call this like a provisional change, and what provisional means in Razor is that when you're typing, it's C#. But the second you try to do something else, so you try to type another tag, or you try to transition back into markup pretty much, we say, all right, that's no longer C#. That is actually HTML. They just want that to be a period. So then you don't get those kind of inconvenient C# compilation errors to deal with.
Perfect. So this is a single, oops, not to the period though, but this is a single expression. This is more akin to the Bumblebee syntax.
Yeah, and so we kind of differentiate these two. So the @curly brace index, that is what we call a code block. So this is, whatever is in there is not going to be rendered out to the page. This is purely C#. This is kind of dictated by that semicolon at the end of that one C# line, where in the expression syntax below in the H2 and H3, there is no semicolon. So that's like a really big difference between the two. There's actually another version of the expression syntax if you want to be even more explicit, where you can do @parentheses, and then you can dictate where your expression begins and ends, which I think is probably even more akin to like this dictating where C# starts and where C# ends when wanting to render it. And this would enable you to do things like 1+1 or anything that has like a space in it where the boundaries of C# aren't super well defined. And you have like spaces and stuff, yeah.
And that's more a single expression, right? When it's
exactly, yeah. Where the view data title, we call that an implicit expression, and with the @parentheses, we call that an explicit expression. Okay. And then with the @curly braces, that is considered a code block.
So inside a code block, you could actually go and define variables that would be in scope for the rest of this page, and
exactly.
Interesting things like that.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things that I feel like people have a little bit of trouble understanding sometimes. But at its core, Razor is just C#. Like behind the scenes, this entire page is generating a C# class that is then executed at runtime. So if you understand that it's just C# class, this inside the @curly brace, all you're doing is you're just typing in that C# class. Now with an expression, Let's see if we can actually show this. So if within this expression, this view data title, if you were to try and write that in that code block, so this, it would be equivalent to write, WRITE, parentheses, view data title, semicolon.
In brotes here, title, semicolon, right, okay.
That is the equivalent of that @syntax. So that's what's going on behind the scenes. So if you think of these statements as just transition, like conversions into C# code, then you can understand that anything in that @curly brace will then, it's just part of that C# class and then in scope. But what that also means is that if you declare that name's variable would not be accessible above the @curly brace. Like it's just not in scope at that point because it's in itself just a C# class.
Gotcha. Right? Okay. So there is this other scenario where it might be non-evident to, so if I'm in a for each over this collection, for example, in my names, so I've declared it's just the list of strings down here. So what am I doing now?
All right. Yes. What we consider that is a variation of a code block. So this is a code block with basically a C# keyword. So think of all the rules of a code block apply by default within this for each, where by default you're in C#. So kind of like in the code block before, you could do view data title without specifying an extra @symbol. The default is C#. But the second you start typing an angle bracket P, like say writing a P tag out, you then transition into HTML. We see that angle bracket and we say, okay, this looks like an angle bracket that is part of an HTML tag, which then means the user wants to go into markup. So inside of those two tags, you end up, or now the default is markup, and you have to use the @symbol to then transition back into C#. So you could do @item there if you wanted to.
Now, whereas if I wanted to actually, though, print out plain text here, though, I can't do that, right? Because
you cannot. Well, I guess you technically could. There is another syntax for doing that. Yes, text, absolutely. And this is a syntax that enables you to specify a begin and end. This text tag is never rendered to the final output when this page is run. This is more or less just saying, I don't really have an HTML tag that I want to show up in the output, but I do want to render some text. Another way to do that actually is at colon. And that says everything into the end till the end of the line is just considered markup.
So all the way out here, this is just all part of this. It's just the rest of the line, like you said, it's until the line break white space kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
And then before and after that is again C sharp. So you can do things in this for each, like declare variables if you really want to, but you can also transition into C sharp. One big restriction though of doing this is try and delete that end of the P tag.
Sure. So things start to.
We now have an error. So that's like one of the problems here is that since Razor's doing all this work to figure out when you want to be in markup versus when you want to be in C sharp, it needs to know the boundaries of your HTML. So since you deleted that end tag, it no longer knows where markup starts and where markup ends. For all it knows, that curly brace at the very end is markup. So the ending curly brace to the for each is just markup at that point, which is not the case.
Right. And so it's confused here. It knows that the P tag's not closed, and that's outside of Razor, I would imagine. But the Razor parser is saying now that it's got a problem with for each as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So now if you were to have that same incomplete P tag outside of a code block, it's absolutely fine. Because at this point, the default is markup. So you can think of when you're inside of a code block, the default is C sharp until you tell it otherwise. Now, when you're outside of a code block, the default is HTML until you tell it otherwise. So when your default is HTML, you, of course, if you did var x is equal to whatever out, like in the default HTML, well, it's just going to render var x is equal to whatever.
Right. So, var x equals 1. That's just text out here.
Exactly.
Okay, so I'll close this guy down so we're not causing any more confusion here. So what about scope of these things? So I've created names up here. I'm able to access it down here. Var foo is down here. So where does that fit in? Does that fall out of scope outside of my for each as I would expect it to in C sharp?
Yeah, it absolutely does. So again, that for each is just translated to a for each statement in the class that's generated for this page. So you were basically you're bound by the restrictions that C sharp is bound to. And I guess one more point to drive home that this is truly just a C sharp class. If you go up to the code block at the top, that H2 tag is converted to a write literal. And then it has quotes and it passes in the string H2. And that is before the write view data line. And that is the equivalent of what that turns into. So there is a write literal method on this class that enables you that all that markup is translated into.
Okay, excellent. So that kind of brings up another point then. This is a way for us to get from HTML-ish looking things into C sharp. But like, should we talk about compilation a little bit and how that process works?
Sure, what do you want to know?
Yeah, I'm really interested in that. So this everything in this file here that is C sharp code, and I guess everything else. So all the HTML gets converted into C sharp write literals. So do you then do like an assembly emit and then just use whatever the result of that is to actually render the page?
Yeah. So MVC has a compilation service. And this compilation service, what it does is it takes the generated output of this CSHTML page. So actually, hold on. I'm gonna rewind a little bit here. So MVC says, okay, you want contact.cshtml. So it goes to Razor, says, can you give me the generated C sharp for this page? And when I say generated C sharp, it is truly just a string. It is one big long string that has the class of this, the C sharp class that corresponds to the CSHTML file. When it has that, It then goes, okay, now that I have this big string, I need to compile this. So MVC has a compilation service. It gets handed that big string. The compilation service happens to know what the application reference is, so it knows what is valid inside of this CSHTML file. And it then uses Roslyn to compile it. When the CSHTML file is then compiled, it's then emitted into its own assembly and then executed.
Very cool. Okay, so now I'm looking at this context CSHTML. This is, I mean, there's no magic here. There's convention. So yep. we're actually entering into that because it has a match on the action name. Yeah. And then so when does that string actually get produced then? Is that at when I compile my project or is that at runtime?
No, that is purely at runtime. So when you build your project, Razor, like all the CSHTML files are just CSHTML files. They can't be like, there's nothing that represents their C# representation on disk. None of that exists. It isn't until runtime when MVC says, okay, I have a request that came in that looks like it's pointing towards a CSHTML file that I know exists on disk, that it then goes to Razor, has it do its magic to convert it to C#, and then runs it. So it's all runtime. But that is something that we are working on. So on our team, we are currently working on Razor pre-compilation, and we have that in a publicly available pull request on MVC right now, which is kind of cool. And we're trying to make it so when you do build or publish your project, that these CSHTML files get converted into their C# counterparts. So then it's less work at runtime.
How extensible is the pipeline going to be for this stuff? Like I'm thinking about other Vue languages. Specifically, I'm thinking about Jade as a really cool concept for writing HTML in super shorthand. Like, could we hook into the pipeline and make like a Jade and still use most of the C# compilation stuff?
Absolutely. So one of the big, really nice things about this whole ASP.NET Core world is that we're all sitting on top of this one dependency injection framework that is really familiar across everything we ship. So what that enables us to do is it's like every part of MVC is super component, like modularized. Everything is a module. So if you wanted to add, say, a Jade language, you would add a new Vue engine, a Vue engine that understood Jade. And that Vue engine would have to take care of capturing a Jade file, parsing it, executing it. But in the end, all MVC cares about is that something happened and it rendered some output, and that's it. So however that happens, it doesn't care about. You can absolutely register new Vue engines to make that possible.
So implementing a Vue engine is definitely non-trivial, but hooking it into the pipeline, that should be pretty easy.
Exactly. I couldn't have put it better. Yes.
Cool.
Writing it, very difficult. Getting it in there, very easy.
Cool.
So Simon, one of the things that we've kind of been talking about with the advent of some of the new features in Razor has been around service injection.
Yeah, so we have the ability to do service injection right into Vue now, which I know we've survived without it for a while, but I think it's kind of a cool concept. And one of the ideas that we were throwing around, gosh, like 2 years ago now, when we first discovered this, was that if you had something like a drop-down list, an option list, then you could inject whatever the tool is or whatever the object is that creates that list directly into the Vue. And you don't have to worry about like, oh, should it be added to my model? Should I put it in Vue data? That sort of thing. But you can just do the stuff right in there. And that generated some controversy. What do you think about that?
So stick a position. Controversy. Could you explain more?
Well, I think that part of it was people were just not familiar with the idea of being able to inject stuff directly into the views. But then other people were really strongly in favor of everything that you need to display your page should be part of a view model that gets passed back from the controller.
I think there is a good balance between the two.
It's a very Microsoft answer of you.
So I'll give some examples. By default, in every single view, we have a whole bunch of these inject statements automatically added for you that you aren't aware of. One example of this is the HTML helper. So whenever you HTML dot something, that is actually being injected into your page by default. So without that, I think, so your inject statement needs a, what is it called? It's a type name, then a space property name. Yeah. the semicolon might be causing the issue. Oh, there we go. Awesome. But yeah, so the HTML helper is one of these things that is injected into your page by default. Now, this is something that is kind of like a utility, right? So not everything in DI is something that is super stateful and has all the model type information in it. HTML helper in this case is, like, again, just a utility that helps you do things. In this case, we said HTML helpers are something that should be widely accessible, so it is there by default. We have several other services, so the URL helper, so url.content, things that help you resolve tilde slash, things that enable you to like construct URLs easily, are injected into your view. There's a whole bunch of them. Now, one of the nice things that inject enables you to do is you can actually override this default behavior. So before, with HTML helpers, you would say, okay, I want to extend the HTML helper class to do, I don't know, tailor method, like just something custom. At that point, you would write an extension method to do that. Well, you can still do that in today's world, but you could also create your own HTML helper and replace the one that is defaultly injected. So it's all based off of the name. So if you were to inject something that had a different type name than HTML helper, but it had the same property. So in this case, at inject, let's say some service and then HTML, go down and try typing HTML dot. It's nothing's there. It's no,
right, because I got an empty class there.
Interesting.
Right?
Exactly. Nothing's there. So part of that is enabling you to replace things that are already existent on your page, if you, or maybe even just extending them in a more familiar way than, say, writing extension methods. Now, like I said, you can still write extension methods. All that stuff is doable and you can do it. But this is just another route to make that happen. So injection, it's, when I said balanced, it could be somewhat a Microsoft answer, as you said, but at the same time, it truly is a balance, because you don't always want to have all these utilities being flown in. So if you remove the semicolon and that inject, that is, you'll see this say hello. And then the, oh, and you'll need a using statement for the sum service as well, or you can just fully qualify it. Either one. But yeah, so it's these inject statements, it's really up to the users and like what they feel makes sense for them. Because of course you could flow all these things in via the model as well. But yeah, so just like that, you can then do your own things with HTML. Now, granted, this then removes the whole HTML helper from your page. Maybe that's a problem, but right. Maybe it's not. Maybe you truly want this replaced behavior. Yeah. You could also envision this. So we have a new thing called view imports. And view imports basically says whatever directive, so a eraser directive is something that affects parsing. In this case, we see this at using MVC basics. That is stamped on every single view that is adjacent or below that view. So if it exists in a folder that is descendant of it, or if it is next to it, you can envision that MVC basics is just stamped on the top of it.
So I could create my own view imports here in home, and that wouldn't affect anything north in the tree or outside of that lateral space, though. So person and shared and anything down here wouldn't be affected, correct, by view, yeah, imports that I create in home. Right.
But now the really cool thing here, which kind of works with inject, is let's say that you overrode the inject in this view imports here. Well, you could then re-override it again in your home folder. So view imports kind of combined to make new things. So for instance, if you had one inject statement here overriding HTML, and then you had another view imports in your home folder that said, actually, I want HTML to mean this other thing, you could absolutely do that. So it enables this kind of cascading behavior where you don't always want the same behavior across all of your views. this could enable you to change that. So you could change this to be interesting, exactly. And that would make it the something.other is the new HTML property for all things underneath the home folder. So in combination with view imports, it definitely makes it a little more powerful, I'd say. And I think one of the nice things here too is you don't have to touch web config anymore in order to add using statements.
Yeah, that's huge. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like some of the contention comes across the idea that because it looks like other types of service injection, that, you know, the question is, well, if I've got a statistics service as an example that's going to generate a block of, or give me a collection, exposes a collection that might be loaded from cache, is that then an appropriate thing to inject here?
A statistic thing that I...
Yeah, so imagine I'm going to be using it on multiple, maybe it's a dashboard of some kind, and I've got a number of collections of data that's, you know, maybe I don't want to have, I've got different views of dashboards, and my composition model I'm kind of dissuaded from creating 15 different view models because it's all going to have the same thing. I just want that data in each of them. Like, is this a replacement in part for view model then, or should I stick to the types of things that HTML helper provides?
So I do think that's actually a good route to, like, a statistic utility would be quite good, because if it's something that you need in all of your views anyways, well, in every single one of your controller actions, you really don't want to be finding out all that information and passing
shopping it. Cart, right?
Yeah, it's not really a great alternative. Like, I've also seen it been used as like a script manager. So we don't currently have that in MVC. We don't have something that manages all your scripts on your page. But if you inject something into your page that's like a script manager, well, it then enables you to register all your scripts across all your pages, and it can be smart about what's rendered. So there's a lot of various routes you can take with the inject keyword, but definitely not a replacement for view model. I think if anything, it cleans your view models up to be more applicable to what the page is truly doing.
Okay, so a couple of other things that we've got, so one of the things that we commonly see is that, you know, like when we're troubleshooting, we're helping other people, and they maybe don't understand the concepts around working with view models. We see a lot of pollution in the view data or the view bag properties that are available to us here.
Sure.
What's the backstory there? Why are these here? Like, it's not a best practice to load up a whole bunch of data into this collection. So what's the background? Why are these here?
So you're gonna hate my answer.
compatibility.
The answer is balance. The reason why is there's always a balance. So imagine here for your about page, right? You have a view data title and you have a view data message. Well, do you really want to create a brand new model for something as simple as this? Maybe. If this only had the view data message, do you really want to have a model that only has the message and is never used again? So the answer is always maybe, and it's up to the user. But for those who do not want to have all these extra classes in their code base, this is a really convenient way to pass information in. Now, it can definitely be used wrong. If you're using this like a model and passing all your information through to it, you're probably not using view data the correct way. But if you're trying to do something really simple and you're trying to just pass a little tidbits of information that you really don't feel like makes sense to have their own class or their own model, well, this is a great way to do that. And it makes it so that your code base is more maintainable in the long run because you're doing something simple already. It's not something you're going to need to change a lot.
It's not something that you have a class with all these properties on it, and then you stuff that into view data, and then you cast it when you get inside your view. That's using it wrong.
That's using it wrong, correct.
Yeah. I really like to just serialize it to JSON, pass a string through in view data, and deserialize it in the view.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you have to deserialize everything because you're casting. You just can't do it, right? but yeah, so it, like I said, I know you don't like the whole balance answer, but it's truly a balance. You want to find out what makes sense in view data. So imagine this wasn't here. Every single view, you would then have to have some base type for its model. So let's take, for instance, the login page. You don't have this here, but so in a login page, right?
I'll pull that up real quick here as you talk, but go ahead.
Okay. So for a login page, you're going to have a login view model. You want to know the user. You want to know you want to know the user. You want to know bits and pieces about that based on the request that came in. Now, the login page also has a title, right? So the title of the page, does that really make sense to be pushed through from the controller down to the view? I would definitely argue not. By doing that, you're then making it so every single one of your models has to have these extra properties on them that represent this title property, assuming the view data did not exist. So immediately you're polluting every single one of your models if we were to remove the view data bag.
Yeah, and then so, how would they communicate back to your shared layout too? Like yes. They would need to know some common base type, I guess, that had all the same properties. It would get super confusing.
These problems then end up cascading on themselves and becoming really big issues, which we don't want users to have to deal with. So
we don't want to show like the page title showing up in our login view.
Yeah, model. Like what purpose would that have in that login view model? And this is, again, all assuming that the view data did not exist.
Makes sense.
And there wasn't another route to do it. That's the assumption that we're making.
Yeah, a lot of this seems to be like a separation between display concerns and functionality concerns.
Yeah, because in the end, it's called view data. You know, it's not really about the request that's coming. It's like, this is only for the view and what's rendered.
Yep. I have a kind of a related question on the view data thing. In previous versions, like MVC5, I think all the templates used the view bag. Mm-hmm. And now in core, everything's using view data. Curious as to the reason.
It's the same thing.
Well, yeah, they're the same. I'm just curious. So, well, maybe you can kind of explain the relationship between the two, but and why the change in the template.
That is actually one thing that I don't have a clear answer on myself, purely because I didn't work in that area. So I couldn't tell you the reasoning behind why the two are there, but I'm sure there is a solid reason behind it. Yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
I mean, there's certainly times where it's nice to be able to access stuff using a string key and times where it's nice to have something that's a little bit less stringy. So like if you're doing some refactoring, then maybe being able to get access to the view bag is a better approach. But then here, there might be some scenario where I have multiple titles on here inside my view data, and I want to make the decision on the page which one to show.
You know, you also run into issues when, like, if you have like a variable key, how do you do that?
Yeah. I think the underlying implementation is view data, from my understanding, and view bag is just a dynamic type that sits on top of it.
Yep. So
maybe it was used to show off dynamic types at one point.
Yeah, it's one of those. And that's like the same thing. View bag dot title.
Yeah.
So I personally I don't have enough background with view bag to give you a clean answer on that. Sorry.
That's okay.
No, it's good. So, Dave, you've done some time. You spent some time working on tag helpers.
Yes, I have. I guess getting into some more of these new bits with MVC Core was the addition of tag helpers, which I think you did a lot of work on, didn't you, Taylor?
Yeah. Those have been my life. I wrote those guys. They're fun. So, tag helpers are one of those things that we felt. We went a lot of the way towards them with HTML helpers, like back in old MVC. And you could have one C-sharp statement perform a ton of logic. But of course, there were tons of problems with that. Heck, having just to pass in attributes to classes was a pain in the butt, because you'd have to do at class is equal to something because you're restricted by C-sharp. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know all the nice IntelliSense that is provided to you. via our CSHTML editor. There's like a lot of limitations that HTML helpers had, and we thought, you know what, we can do this better. And it kind of also goes back to that whole trying to determine when you transition into C Sharp. Tag helpers are probably the prime example of just pure smartness, of knowing when you want to write C Sharp versus knowing when you don't want to, because you don't even need an at symbol. For a tag helper, the second you start writing in an attribute that happens to be something that's C-sharp based, like this, that div ASP-validation-summary-summary, that is an enum. Like at this point, if you finish that out and type the equals and invoke IntelliSense, like you'll notice that you have all the properties of that enum available to you. You're already in C-sharp, and in this specific case, it's even pre-filling the beginning of that enum for you.
Yeah, it's so cool because it automatically transitions you to C-sharp, like you said, and then also it has the smarts about exactly what type it's looking for, so it's all strongly typed to you. It's really cool.
Exactly, yeah. And in this case, you can also see errors, you know? And I give a lot of talks about tag helpers, and one of the biggest things is that you can write all these utilities that are tag helpers, and then the second you want to change any sort of aesthetic around it, whereas maybe you want to make a certain button appear with a different bootstrap class. Well, all you do is add it. Like in this case, if we look at all these tag helpers, all the green text is what we call bound attributes. All the non-green text, in this case class, these are called unbound. So you can think of bound versus unbound being bound is required for the tag helper to do something, where unbound is just, it's just sitting there. It's extra information that the tag helper most likely will not touch. In its essence, just flows through to the output. So that label, it's going to do something with that email. But the class, it's just going to flow through. So whatever it does based on that email attribute, it's just going to have that class be associated with it when it's finally output. So a lot of cool things tag helpers enable you to do. Very, very powerful.
So here's where we were. Using the ASPX syntax. So the biggest complaint, of course, is that this is not HTML.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, so that is one thing so when we first started this, we had a whole bunch of pushback. It was kind of hilarious. The first iteration of tag helpers, and we showed them off. For instance, the input tag helper, how we had it on iteration one was input. Without the ASP-4, it was just 4. So ASP- was gone from that. And the biggest complaint was, well, shoot, how do I know if this is different? So we thought, okay, we can see why you might think this, because in essence, tag helpers are server-side tags that then do something. So we said, for existing elements that we augment, in this case, input or label or div, if we add a new attribute to it, in this case 4, well, we're going to prefix it with ASP dash. We're saying this is essential for for server-side execution. So for other elements that are not augmented, that are brand new, so we have, there's like an environment tag helper now. There's a cache tag helper. These are tags that didn't previously exist. We chose not to augment the attributes with ASP dash. We chose just to provide them. So it's like environment tag and the names is equal to. And by doing this, we're saying that it's a brand new tag. Since it's a brand new tag, don't have any assumptions. It could be C sharp, it could be something else. It has some sort of logic associated with it, but it's its own tag. We don't need to prefix it with ASP dash. So we tried to make this differentiation so when people were looking at the code that they would know what is server-side, what is not. And then we even went one step further and we added a new directive called @tag_helper_prefix. And what @tag_helper_prefix does is it says whatever is placed after tag helper prefix, and it's a capital H, T-A, lowercase t, then tag, then capital H, helper, then capital P, prefix. Whatever is placed after that, space, th, colon, try that.
Okay.
So, as you noticed, everything unhighlighted. They're not tag helpers anymore. Now, if you go to the input tag below and say th, colon, input, disenables users to then say, I want to be extra explicit when anything could be a tag helper. So this enables you to say, I want to provide my own way for knowing if something is server-side or if it's not. And if I don't have this th colon prefix, it will never be a tag helper. It has to have this. So just another level of just explicitness. And we added this because we found that everyone kind of had their own opinion. Each person felt a little different. So some people love the explicitness. They love the tag helper prefix. Some people were like, I don't want to know. It's just going to do some magic for me. I don't mind if it's server side or client side. I just want that magic.
Right.
And so it was really up to the user.
So is this, I could move this up to view imports then if I wanted to.
You could, yeah. And this would apply to all your pages.
Globally. Are you seeing people using tag helper prefixes? Like I probably won't use them in my project.
We don't actually. So far, it seems that not that many people use it. I think we did a search in all of GitHub, and I think last we looked, it was like just over 10 or 15 entries of it being used.
Okay.
So it's not used a whole lot, but like I said, we just wanted to make that option for users who felt differently, or maybe they're. There's actually an opt out too. That's a whole other case too.
Okay.
Right.
So if you want to say that something is not a tag helper, you can put a bang at the beginning of the tag. And that then says I'm not a tag helper. Oh,
that's an explicit inline opt out then, because it doesn't do my whole, like, it doesn't say remove all inputs. It's just this one.
Exactly. Exactly.
So in this case, you have the ASP4 will actually get rendered out to the client, right?
Exactly. Yep. So that's one thing you got to be careful about with the bang syntax, but that's another route. We don't feel like this is one of those routes that people use to be explicit or not to be explicit. It's more that they have a tag helper that targets a lot of things. So maybe it targets every tag with a class attribute. That is a very heavy tag helper, mm-hmm. and there's a few they don't want it to actually run on. That would enable them to have that functionality.
Okay. Simon, Dave, other questions, Taylor, are there common pitfalls that you see people falling into when they're using Razor, or things that they should avoid or try to do?
Razor itself is just a language. So I would say that try not to put too much logic in the view itself, abstract that out into components, into modules, if you can. I think as far as mistakes go, it kind of ties back into how we started this whole conversation was Razor is just a C# class. Like I just saw a customer the other day who was like, oh my gosh, I'm writing this content in a net curly brace and I can't access it above it. Like what's up with that? And I said, I'm sorry, like we're restricted to the limitations of C# because in the end, this is just a C# class. So understanding that this is just a C# class at its whole and understanding that that is the limitations of Razor helps a lot. And it can also help get other concepts in Razor more ingrained and more understood.
How heavily do you guys envision tag helpers being used? Like you could conceivably write tag helpers for absolutely everything, and you'd end up in a world that was like that looked like React JS. So is that kind of where you think it's going to go? That everything's just going to be custom?
We feel that it is up. I've been using this a lot, but it's really up to what your preference is. Every person has their own preference. Like there are some people who prefer to write to create a tag helper for an if block, right? To create a tag because they like that if syntax. Now others like me personally be like, well, don't write a tag like a tag helper for an if block. That just write an if block if you're going to do that, as long as it's not too complex. That is, I think my personal opinion is that tag helpers become really valuable when they're abstracting more complex logic that doesn't have a lot of value being shown to the developer. They also have a ton of value as far as toolkits go. So if you want to ship these as a package. Well, this means anyone who consumes your package will have consistent functionality and consistent tools across all their entire application. So just one form to be really consistent. It's just a really good consistency device.
And, I have seen in tag helper some people actually put a bunch of stuff into a tag helper and ends up rendering, it actually transforms the tag and outputs what looks to be a very different block of HTML. Actually, yeah. Dave, you do that in your Bootstrap take helpers that you've written as well, where you can just do like a progress bar with a simple div, and then it's a BS progress bar kind of idea. Where do you make the distinction between, you know, and it's probably going to be like a preference thing as well, but where do you make the distinction between you're doing something like a tag helper versus you're doing something like a view component?
So view components we typically say are for business logic. So they want to perform some sort of business logic that is that need. I guess I relate them to child actions how they used to be, but they're not at the same time. Where you want to have some sort of server like code behind that then determines what to do, and then you render some output. Tag helpers, on the other hand. Like today, you could make a tag helper that renders a view if you wanted to, but it's not as first class supported as view components are. We're working on actually changing that. But for view components, business logic. Tag helpers, think of them more as utilities, things that make your life easier, that don't require any sort of like any really complex background logic.
Right on. Before we close out, are there any exciting things coming? I mean, you guys are already working on the V Next 0.1. Is there anything exciting that we should be looking forward to as far as Razor goes?
Actually, there's one really cool thing. So we have an intern, and she is working on something which is view component tag helpers. And what this means is that the current syntax for invoking view components isn't really the best. It's at component.invoke, then you pass in a string that represents the, invoke async, and you'll have to wait this, whatever, but this takes in a string that represents the view component, and then you have to provide a big object that maps to all of the parameters. So it'd be like new object, and then it's like parameter one is equal to whatever, or whatever your parameter name happens to be. So, it's a little clumsy, and not to mention you don't get any like checking on this either. So this would be an anonymous object in this case. But so that's one of the unfortunate parts of view components. So we said, okay, how can we make this better? And tag helpers were a great way to do that. So she's working on making it so the second you have a view component, well, you could just write a tag helper for it. So it'd be VC colon whatever the view component name is, and then you'd have the name pop up as autocomplete, you'd have all the parameters pop up as autocomplete, and then all be strongly typed, you'd know what type each parameter was, and you're guaranteed not to fail, is the idea.
That's cool. I'm looking forward to seeing the implementation of that, actually.
Because I would see, like, because it's strongly typed, if param is a string and some enum is an enum, then I'd actually see the list of enums here like I would with other... Yeah. Yeah, very cool.
You would. Yep, and you'd have the same. So with an enum in that case, you also wouldn't have to write out the whole enum value like as you would in the syntax above. So you would have that all niceties of tag helpers that get included. So you get some pretty cool things going on there.
Looking forward to seeing it. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Taylor. And
yeah, not a problem. Glad to have you. Yeah. Right, glad to have me. Glad to have me.
And thanks everyone for joining us again here on ASP.NET Monsters. Remember to like, comment, share, and send us an email with your comments and questions.
Thanks everyone. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.